Welcome. I know we have a couple guests here this week. It's great to have you. It's an honor to have you, actually. So thanks for being here. Some faces I haven't seen in a while. Great to see you guys as well. So those of you guys who haven't been with us for a little bit, and we get together every 2 weeks, so I'm going to recap. Okay, I'm going to do like, it's going to be like a 5-minute recap. And I really want you to understand what we're talking about this week. Not just today, but this whole series is really the heartbeat of our church. If I could have, I didn't know many other series of sermons that I would rather do than this one to kind of get us off on the right foot. Maybe at some point we'll talk about values, because there's a lot of things that we value. We talked about in our huddle this morning for volunteers to get here, and we could do a huddle at 9:30, and we talked about us being a generous people. That's really important to us. We do want to be generous. We want to be generous with our time, with our money, with our efforts. So that's really important. But at the end of the day, and this is going to sound a little bit harsh, but I'm going to say it anyway. At the end of the day, most churches have trained their people to, at best, serve coffee or greet. Or those are right, or maybe teaching kids ministry. Those are okay things. Those are good things. We want to be good in that. But we must be good at the main thing. And the main thing is being a disciple maker. Like, that's it. Like, this church exists to be what I put on the website, and this is in my heart and soul. We exist to be a disciple making movement in the triangle. That means movements, you don't have control of movements. Movement is something that is kind of like a wildfire. It's kind of out of control. I think we are a success when we start to see that happening. Now, I want to see people far from God, man, come to faith in Jesus. But I want you to know that I want to equip you and help you, not just through the sermon, but through groups. Probably in most of your groups, we're doing Discovery Bible Study. Some, that's an equipping type of thing for you to go out and hopefully talk to people and maybe do something in your own home or at work or whatever, some kind of Bible study, small church thing where you can start to reach people who are far from God with that tool. Does that make sense? So that's a really big deal for us. We just think movements are the key. Like, we don't want to just see this place out. We don't just want to see us outgrow this place, although we probably will. But we want to see you be a disciple maker where you are, where you live, work, study. Remember this? Play and shop. Like, how can you do that, right? How can we be disciple makers there? Because here's the thing. I'm only one person. You know that, right? Unless I'm schizophrenic, then maybe I think I'm two or three. But I'm only one person. But we is greater than me. We is greater than me. And my primary job and role as a pastor is to encourage and help and equip you to be a disciple maker. We want our church to be, yes, can you bring guests? Absolutely. We think guests will love it here. We want them to be greeted well. We want them to have good coffee. We want them to have a good experience. That's all that we want, all that. That's why we appreciate Howard and his crew for hosting us. And this is just a great venue for what we do for this season. It's a great venue. But we want to equip you to be a disciple maker. So what are the things, really quick, we're going to go through. What are the things that we said disciple makers need to do? All right. One, prioritize Jesus over everything. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. It's not you that changes lives. This should help you. It's not you that changes lives. It's Jesus that changes lives. He's the person that changed my life. He's the person, if you're a Christian, that can change, that changed your life. If you're not a follower of Jesus, he's the person who can change your life. Let me give you a hint today. Like, I think a lot of times we put happiness on other people. We want them to make us happy. Listen, you're responsible for your own happiness. And I can tell you the way to get happy, you don't get happy, you give happy. Happiness is not something that you chase, you'll never find it. It's something that actually comes to you as a byproduct of giving and blessing to other people. You don't get happy, you give happy. And I'm going to tell you right now, one of the ways that you will see your life change is by putting your faith in Jesus. Not only putting your faith in Jesus, but seeking and pursuing Jesus. It's all about Jesus. You can't change anybody. If I could, I mean, I can inspire you to change as a leader, but who changes the core of who you are, your heart and soul? There's only one, Jesus. That's it. Even with some of my kids, and maybe you've seen this, at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do as parents. You have to pray for your kids, because there's things that you want to happen in your kids that won't happen just by your parenting. God has to come in and do something. Does that make sense? So Jesus over everything. And here's the idea. The idea is that you can bring Jesus to them, who the people outside the church, that it's not even dependent on them coming to our building. Now, do we want them to come? Yes. But you can bring Jesus. Tell them your story. Tell them how God changed your life. Does that make sense? So the second thing is use Jesus' strategy for disciple making. Quote, person of peace, P-O-P, right? Person of peace. In other words, who is the person? Remember we said a person of peace is someone who most likely does not know Jesus. They're not religious, but they like you and they serve you. Whoever that, if you can think in your head, who are people who like me, right? And if nobody likes you, we've got other problems. We can talk about that later. But who are people that somewhat like me and they serve me? Most likely it's at work or in your neighborhood. Like, where, who are those people? And the reality is, Jesus tells us to go find those people. Don't worry about everybody in the world per se. Find those couple of people who like you and serve you, and they're a good starting place. Have them over to your house, and we're going to talk about that more today. The third is the disciple in culturally relevant ways. You got to disciple in culturally relevant ways. I asked you guys a couple weeks ago, what is the main thing that people would complain about when it comes to Christianity? And we said they say you would be hypocrites. The idea is that people would rather teach it than they would live it. And the idea is that you and I need to make sure that we're living the gospel before we preach the gospel. Does that make sense? How many of you guys know people, church people, who you would hope that they wouldn't tell anybody that they're a Christian because it would make it harder on those who want to share the gospel? If probably half of the Christians in the world, if they would quit talking about it, we'd probably be better off. Right? It's really hard, but it's true. If we're going to talk about the gospel, let's make sure we're living the gospel. And I want all of you to talk about the gospel. More importantly, I want you to live the gospel. Does it make sense? You live out what Jesus is doing in you. So the fourth thing is know your story. So we said know your story, celebrate, listen, eat, bless, recreate, or recreate. And I gave you guys the example of, hey, listen, we need to be, and this sounds great, but we need to be a party people, really. We need to be a party people. If we talk about happiness, who has more reason to be joyful in the world than Christians? Think about it. In the long run, Christian people have eternity to look forward to. We know that Jesus is going to come back and make all things new. We're going to be in this incredible heaven, new heavens and new earth that it's hard for us to even fathom and imagine. We have eternity with God. Like, there should be a deep-seated joy in us, and we should be okay throwing parties, having fun, and just celebrating life. Unfortunately, I don't know why this is, but some of the meanest people I knew in life were like Christian people. Like, they were just mad. I know. Listen, if you're going to come to this church, I want you to be happy. I want you to be glad. I want you to not look like you just drank something sour, right? I tasted some nasty kombucha the other day that had vinegar in it. Man, that's what it looks like. You know, I'm thinking that's what some Christian people probably are drinking before they come to church. That's why your breath stinks and you got a frown on your face. No, we want to be happy people. I want you to throw parties and invite me. Invite some people that don't know Jesus to your house. And I want to come. I promise you, I'll do my best to be there. And then the fifth one, they use simple patterns and practices. So we have this idea of, hey, you got to find that routine. Let's not make discipleship so hard. We think discipleship should be a little bit easier. And then there are different patterns. We talked about, I think last week we talked about this idea of a life transformation group. And here's the simple pattern in practice. Don't make it complicated. You need to find some people that you're confessing sin to. That's the exhale, remember? Remember I said if a person has drowned or they are drowning, you pull them up, you actually have to get the water out the lungs before you can put stuff in. You got to do a little compression and get the water out. And then you can start to put air in. Think of it as breathing. Exhale, inhale. How do you exhale? You confess sin, right? Now, that's not something I'm going to do here. Hey, guys, guess what? You know, this isn't the right place. But if you meet with 2, 3, or 4 people on a semi-regular basis, you can tell them what's going on in your life. And that's kind of what a counselor does, right? When you go to a counseling, half of it is you telling them what's going on. So that's a big deal. And then taking in. So I'm doing this with a couple guys. We're reading through the book of Galatians. Read through my three chapters, Scott. So we're read through. What are we reading? 15 chapters a week. So no, we're just challenging one another to read scripture. Listen, a verse a day won't keep the devil away. It won't. You better be taking in more than that. Reading the scriptures. So that's the intake. All right. So what is number six? Number six. All right. Put it on the screen. Drum roll. Oh, there it is. There it is. Sorry. Practicing. Hey, this is really simple. Practice the art of hospitality. Now, when we talk about hospitality, if we're honest, it's probably something that we all can do. It's probably something we all long to do. It's something that we like when it's done to us, don't we? Don't you like it when you go to someone's house or you go to a restaurant or even to a place like this and they're hospitable? They welcome you. Does it take special training? No. Will it push us out of our comfort zone? All the introverts in the house, raise their hand. Yes, it will. Right? That's a lot of y'all. Raise your hand again. Whew, all right. Extroverts in the house. A couple of, yeah. All right. Mom, where's mom? Raise both hands. Jeez. She'll talk to anybody. Talk the bark off a tree. So how would we define, that's where I get it from. How would we define hospitality? How do you define? If I actually looked this up the other day. How do we actually define? What's the definition? Here it is. Ready? The friendly and generous reception and entertainment of guests, visitors, or strangers. It's the friendly and generous reception. That's this idea of, hey, we're glad you're here. Reception and entertainment. Woo, watch me dance. And visitors or strangers, right? You don't have to actually dance, but you know. It's you're entertaining people. You're welcoming them. Now, do you notice another? There's another big word that goes along with hospitality. And all you do is take away a couple of letters. It's the idea of a hospital. A hospital, if you actually look this up, there in Latin, it actually, the English word actually came from that Latin word, hospital. So there's a lot of, the idea is that a hospital is a place, think about this, they welcome in people who are sick. They actually bring in people, any kind of hospital, right? I know you like pets, pet hospital, same thing. They bring in people, animals, whatever, to take care of them. The idea, that's where the word comes from. It's the bringing in of something that is sick. And you think about it, that's how it should be in Christianity too, right? If we have the hope of the world in our lives and we're doing well, the idea is we invite or bring in people who also need help. Now, I want to look at some verses in this. So in the book of Romans, so we're going to kind of transition to the Bible now. In the book of Romans, is Romans chapter 12, the Apostle Paul, and if you have you have your phone or whatever you got, you can open it up. If you look at Romans chapter 12, Romans 12, 1 and 2, one of my favorite verses in the Bible. And the idea is that Paul is telling these churches, this is multiple house churches in Rome. They meet all over Rome. Paul writes this letter called the book of Romans to these house churches, okay? And just for the record, this is how pretty much all the epistles are in the New Testament. They're not necessarily written to one group. There's actually multiple groups meeting in homes, anywhere from 30 to 70 in homes all over the city. So when Paul writes these letters, he's writing to like these multiple churches. They would take the letter, like somebody would come in the door and bring the letter to us, and some guy would literally, a guy or girl, I guess, stand up and read it. And people would ask questions about it. Okay, well, tell me about this. So that would have been their sermon. So that's what Paul has been doing. What he's telling them is that in the past, through the law, there used to be sacrifices. So back in the Old Testament days, for you to be right with God, you had to present a sacrifice, depending on what you did wrong, whether it be lamb or, you know, or dove or whatever, depending on even how much money you had. The idea is that you would present a sacrifice to cover your sin. In other words, the blood of the animal would be like, would pardon your sin. So if you wanted to be right with God, every once in a while, you need to be making some sacrifices, right? Because we all sinning in here, right? So the idea, we would go to the temple, make sacrifice. Paul tells these groups of people, and there's most likely these would have been Jewish people, that you now don't need to go to the temple anymore. It's telling people that, hey, look, through Jesus, You ever heard this phrase, one and done? It's a one and done. Jesus was perfect, born of a virgin, sinless, important. He became a sacrifice for us. And now, our righteousness isn't if we are obeying the law, although we would obey the law, but it's now through Jesus. And the way that we receive that, this is the gospel, the way that we receive that is that we put our faith in the work that Jesus did on the cross. So now we have right to God because of what Jesus did. Does that make sense? That's a gospel in a sermon. And Paul is telling his people this. So now, then he goes on to explain, kind of because that happened, what is our response? And this is a great verse if you have kids. I'm going to remind my kids of this verse. This is a great passage. All right, here we go. Kids, pay attention. Here it is. Romans chapter 12, verse 10. So 10 verses in, after what I just showed you, this is what he says. He says, be devoted to one another in love. Like, and then honor one another above yourselves. Be devoted to one another in love and honor one another above yourselves. When Paul is writing this letter, understand, he's writing first to the church. So this letter would be for us in this context. He would say, listen, I want you to be devoted to the people in that particular church body. He's telling us, this is a command. You and I, watch this, you and I ought to prioritize people in the church that you go to. For you, you go here. So the people in this gathering should be priority in your lives. If you look up this word in Greek, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it in Greek, right? But this is what it means. If you look up the word be devoted to one another in Greek, it means the love of parents to children or husbands and wives to one another. Think about that. So be devoted to one another. Think the way that a parent is devoted to their children, which is what? Is that high commitment or low commitment? Some of you is like, well, yeah, like the way that we're committed to our children is the same priority that he says we ought to put on other people in the local church. Paul is telling us to develop the same type of love. Now, another word in the Greek in this little phrase, what they say is it means a place of storage. It's a storage facility. So he's saying, you put together this place, it literally means a place, an actual place, that could be your home, that could be this building, that could be a lot of places, where we get together and we show love and devotion to one another. Wow. Why are we even talking about this? Because I think this is a really, really big deal. If you think about your homes, most people in our world, probably in our country is better safe to say, would think of their home as a safe place, and that's not bad, but they also think of it as an escape from the world. Like when I go to my house, I'm going to watch, this is not what I do, but this is how some people think, I'm going to go and watch Netflix, or I'm going to do whatever I need to do to take my mind off of the work, because work's terrible, or this is bad, and I can't, you know, right? But I think that our home should be a whole lot more than that. What if... Think about this. What if your home could be a weapon in a good way for the gospel? What would it look like to use your home to see people come to faith in Jesus? What if we used our safe place to be a witness for Christ? Look at in this verse, it says this, and it says, honor one another above yourselves. Wow. How many of you guys think that that is hard to do? Yeah. Because why? What do we do? We look out for ourselves first. That's natural. Who's number one? We are, right? Like, who's number one? Let me go look in the mirror. I'll show you who's number one, right? We're number one. And that's a natural way to think. But for you and I to choose to honor other people is actually a way to break selfishness in your life. In other words, you're never going to feel like honoring other people above yourself. Hardly ever. And if you wait for the feeling, you'll never do it. But Paul says, I'm gonna tell you that you have to choose to honor others above yourself. This is really hard to do. It's not natural. It's natural for us to think of ourselves first. Think about this for a second. What about your kids? When kids are young, who's number one? Them, right? It's my, their favorite word, mine. It's mine. It's mine. I want that. It's mine. Right? You put a bunch of 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds in a room, see what happens. It's a train wreck. It's a train wreck. Right? But what happens as they get older? What do you kind of expect from them? You expect them to start to see the world through someone else's eyes. You expect them to start to share a little bit, right? That's a sign of maturity. It's the same thing with us. I would be willing to say that you can measure Christian maturity by how much you actually think about other people. How much do we, as God's people, think about maybe discipleship? How much do we think about others? How much do we think about blessing people in our church? How much do we think about blessing people outside our church? Do you remember the greatest commandments that Jesus gives? He says, there's really only two. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Do you remember the second one that he says is just like it? Love your neighbor as yourself. Do you see how that's a big deal? I've heard some people say that you can't be right with God if you're not right with others. In other words, your horizontal relationship with people has a huge effect on your vertical relationship with God. Why? Because John 3:16, come on, God so loved the... It wasn't just the planet that he was talking about. He's talking about people. He loves the people. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Do you see that? Now, I want to show you one more verse and then we'll get into the application part of this. If you go down just like a little bit further, look at what the Apostle Paul says here in Romans 12:13. He says, share with the Lord's people who are in need. He says, practice hospitality. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. What's interesting about this is Paul seems to be saying, if you want to practice hospitality, the way you do that is you share with other people. Now, again, what good does it do to teach the gospel to someone outside the church if we're not doing it here? The idea is, I'm telling you, I think we have to be a church that prioritizes people here within the church. Not to the exclusion of those outside the church, but there's got to be a both and for us. That's what Paul's saying. Paul's saying, share with the Lord's people who are in need, practice hospitality. Now, a way that I would, this is kind of the conclusion, the way that I would say this and I would love for us to practice this is, here it is, ready? Pull that for me somewhere. There it is. Find a need and meet it. Ready? Say it with me. Ready?
Find a need and meet it.
I do better than that. Ready? Let's do it again.
Find a need and meet it.
Let's go. One more time.
Find a need and meet it.
Does that make sense? You find a need and meet it. You find a need and meet it. You find a need and meet it. That's what it means to be hospitable. What does it mean to be hospitable?
Find a need and meet it.
I love it. Thank you, Josh. Find a need and meet it. Find a need and meet it. Let's play this out a little bit. If we hear about someone going through something in our church, what do?
Find a need and meet it.
Yeah, that's the idea. And watch this. You don't even wait for people to ask you. You don't wait for people to ask you to help. Find a need and meet it means you're on the lookout for people who have needs and you do your best to meet it. Now, I get it. You can't do that for every single need, but you start to find people in the church and you start to look for their needs and meet it. Andy Stanley has this phrase, you can do for one what you can't do for all. Just because you can't meet everybody's needs doesn't mean you shouldn't meet some people's needs. See, we have to figure out a way for us as the local body to find a need and meet it. I mean, imagine with me for a minute, what would people think about the local church If they found needs and they met it.
Wow.
We would have the right then to preach the gospel because we would live out the gospel. Think about Jesus. This is what Jesus did for you. Listen, in all your situations of life, you need to bring it back to the gospel. Watch this. What did Jesus do? When you and I were in the far country, when we sinned against God and we deserved hell and destruction, Jesus came for us. Did he find a need? Yes, he did. Did he meet it? Over and abundantly. You see, Jesus found a need and he met it, and he met it with his own life. So here's what I want you to think about. 2 minutes and I'm walking off. One, and we don't have these on the screen, but I want you to invite someone from the church into your home. I want you to find multiple people. Amy and I have talked about this. We have a group and a lot of people come to my house for that, but we have to also figure out a way to invite people into our home semi-regularly just to hang out. Some of you guys have thought about, I need to invite you into my home. Like, does that make sense? We want to practice hospitality, get to know some of you guys better. Maybe throughout the summer, my wife isn't here, she doesn't know this, but maybe we could have all of you over, kind of one or two couples at a time. That would be my goal. I'd love to have all of you over. Not just in one swoop, but you know, couple at a time. Hey, you guys come over. Maybe I can do a sign up, genius, and you guys can all come over. I would be fine with that. My wife doesn't want to clean the house, all this stuff, so she might not be so cool with it, but we're going to figure something out. But listen, I want you to do the same thing. Who are some people who you are interested in our church, right? And you'd like to get to know a little better, invite them over. Invite them over. The second thing, and you knew this was coming, what about people in your neighborhood or people at work or people that you come across that don't know Jesus? What would it like for you to invite them over? And you're not inviting them necessarily to share the gospel. You're inviting them over to live out hospitality. And then at some point, you will earn the right to be heard. And you can tell them about what God's done in your life. And my third application point is this. Throw parties. Remember, I told you. Yeah, listen. Andrew told you about a block party that we're doing at my house. Okay. We have access to a block party trailer all summer. It is completely free. I would love, I think God would love this too. I would love for all of you who live in a neighborhood or a semi-neighborhood to sign up for that block party trailer and use it. Listen, you're going to need a truck to move it, but I could probably help you out if you let me know in advance. I would love to see you throw parties in your neighborhood. There's a snow cone machine. There's a popcorn machine. There's some sports stuff. And there's at least two big fun jugs. One for little kids, one for bigger kids. Generators provided, extension cords are provided. I mean, literally, probably all you do is get ice, right? We want you to throw parties this summer. Why? Be hospitable. Does that make sense? So I'm going to post in our local Facebook page, I'm going to post the contact info to the lady that you would talk to use the block party trailer. Does that make sense? So you just say, hey, her name is Julie. Hey, Julie, what is it like on, you know, June 23rd? It's taken. What about June 29th? Free. You know what I mean? And we'll work it out. But that, does that make sense? Hospitality. Listen, I personally believe, and I know people who've written books on this, this has been a new phenomenon that you and I as the local church could change the world if we were hospitable. Because think about it. We live in a world where people drive into their homes and they shut the garage door and they are done. Till the next day they get off work. If that's you, you got to change that. What would it like for us as the people to be hospitable? I think we could change the world. Father, thank you for today. Thank you for these folks. Thank you for loving us like you do. Thank you for the gospel. Jesus, as we sing about you, will you help us to live this out? Help us to be people of hospitality. And God, will you help us as your church to be hospitable, starting with the people in this local body? Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the gospel that God, when we were out in the far country, you came to save us and change us. And God, help us return the favor to those around us. We love you. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.